Well, hello, everybody, and thanks for being here tonight for a special Libertarian Christian Institute Green Room live stream. I'm Jacob Winograd. I am the host of the Biblical Anarchy podcast here with the Christians for Liberty Network, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute. My co-host for tonight, he's going to be chiming in once in a while with some comedic relief, channeling his inner Matthew Bellis, and also kind of running tech for us. But my co-host will be Doug Stewart. And of course, we are joined to complete the Jewish synergy trifecta here by the one and only Spike Cohen. So, Spike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic, Jacob. Thanks for having me back on, man.
Yeah, always a pleasure to talk with you, Spike. I wish that sometimes we could have you on and just talk about like how libertarians are getting along and everyone's working well together and there's no drama. But unfortunately, libertarians conspire very well to make sure that there's always some new thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. And so there's, of course, a lot of different things that are going to tie into what we're talking about tonight. But the main theme, as we have there at the bottom there, is the question of, is libertarianism winning? And to sort of preface the conversation that we're going to have, you know, people have been having a lot of, in the libertarian world, just heated debates, and seems a little bit more than usual, perhaps, over the direction of the movement. Seems like more than ever, the divides over whether we should take a more pragmatic route or be very based in our principles. We should take a, you know, incremental route on different things. If we should even be involved in political action or not. And then over, you know, the issue that we've always been divided on, whether that's borders or, you know, borders, especially lately with the things going on, you know, with the immigration crisis. Yep. And so, you know, I find myself somewhat in the middle. I feel like there are people in the Liberty Movement or people who have left the Liberty Movement because they're just totally black-pilled, right? They think that the libertarian moment has basically come and gone, and we need to find some other way forward because libertarianism just isn't the answer, or at the very least, you know, they might still identify as libertarians, but they're just content to kind of work within the status paradigm because they don't see any victories whatsoever happening. Spike, I know you have been, you know, with your involvement in You Are the Power and just your general, you know, libertarian activism, you've been not just all over the country, but you've even had, you know, experiences and conversations with people outside of our own country, people involved in the liberty movement all over the world. So what is your perspective, just kind of to set the stage here in terms of the state of the liberty movement? Would you say that, you know, are you black-pilled? Are you white-pilled? Are you somewhere in the middle? And you know, what experiences could you share to sort of get the conversation rolling there?
Well, I might be the wrong person to ask about the whole black-pilled, white-pilled thing because I am forever the optimist. And it's by choice that I choose to be an optimist. So, like, I learned a long time ago that for the most part, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And, you know, we can certainly try to do things to affect change. But to the question of whether to be optimistic or pessimistic about it, I'd rather be optimistic and it turns out it wasn't the case than to be pessimistic and be proven correct. So, you know, I'm probably the wrong, like I said, that I may be the wrong person to ask there. But I will say this, I'm seeing the liberty movement growing by leaps and bounds across the planet. I'm seeing libertarianism increasingly being talked about as an increasingly mainstream thing. Now, I think that we are certainly very small compared to the other, you know, major political ideologies. And certainly from the electoral politics standpoint, we've got a long, long, long way to go. But if you were asking, for example, are libertarians winning the argument? Yeah, unfortunately, every time reality kicks in and we see the things that we've been warning about for years coming to fruition, we win that argument. And if we're consistent about it, we're able to say, look, we said this would happen, and here's how we can fix it. Here's how we can, you know, stop these things from happening in the future and start listening to us now. the biggest problem that we have, I would say, in the States at the very least, and it's hard to really boil it down to just one problem because there's a few major problems. But I think that the biggest problem we have is something that we don't necessarily have a good fix for. And it's that we all kind of loathe politics. There's a, I don't remember who it was who said it, but there's a, there.
we've momentarily lost Spike. But while Spike's hopefully finding his way back to us, Spike, God, we all loathe politics. And Carrie, are you able to? Can we hear you now?
Very often.
I believe so. Can you hear
me? Yes, we can hear you. Okay, Spike, are you back?
I'm back. Yes. What happened?
Did you? I don't know. You froze on our end. In the middle of you said we all loathe politics,
good.
And then
my Ethernet's plugged in. Yeah, well, that's good. That's the other problem we have is I keep going, I keep disconnecting. That's the biggest problem that libertarians have. No, what I was saying is, you know, there's, I forget who it was who said it, but, you know, people who just want to be left alone are at a quite a disadvantage or at a kind of behind the eight ball against people who want to win and will win by any means necessary. That is something we have to consider. It's why we don't like politics, is that instead of people making their own choices and working together voluntarily with others, we instead have to form these kind of collective groups and kind of impose our will on the political scene. And it kind of goes against inherently everything that we want to do. And so what happens is very often a lot of people will end up leaving the liberty movement because they want to get things done. And they see us largely, you know, spending time arguing about, you know, the purest form of libertarianism while the world just keeps getting worse and worse. So, and I understand that. I understand why people go there. Unfortunately, a lot of people end up saying, well, libertarianism itself is wrong. I don't think that's the case. I think what we need to do is realize that if we want to engage in politics, we are going to have to do things we don't really like doing, but with the goal of being able to create and work towards a world where politics becomes less and less and less important in our lives.
Yeah, I would say for the sake of this conversation, although I don't find myself personally completely on the black-pilled side, I'm going to probably take on, for the sake of the conversation, the role of those people in sort of the questions I ask and arguments I'm going to make.
Yeah.
Because I think to sort of steelman their positions and maybe explain where I'm coming from, and then maybe Carrie can jump in a little bit, because she joined this planned conversation because her and I were having some back and forth on Twitter. Because I don't call it X on Twitter yesterday, along these lines. But I think that libertarianism is true. I think that we have the answers to basically everything, that all the problems that are going on in the world. Yeah. But I just think that we are so far away from a lot of these things being put into practice. And I see so much harm. I see harm in my local level because, you know, local government can be intrusive and damaging. I, of course, see harm from the federal government and the tyranny abroad. I see problems, obviously, you know, around the globe. I sort of started out as an anti-war leftist, and, you know, that's sort of what led me to libertarianism. So that's always been my number one issue. And so I see all these instances of just, you know, of violence and of state predation. And I sometimes feel like, you know, I would rather do what I can to, you know, reduce as much as is possible the amount of damage that's happening now. And if that means that I'm going to pursue solutions that are not going to be perfect libertarian solutions, I guess, at least where I'm at, I feel like that's the best path forward. Not because I'm black-pilled on libertarianism, but like the people who are, I get their frustration because I think sometimes they see, kind of you alluded to, Spike, like we're spending so much time, a lot of libertarians spend so much time, what I would say, like, you know, sort of living in Encapistan in their head and just sort of endlessly having debates over which one of them is the purest libertarian. Meanwhile, it's like, you know, it's like, I don't want to be the libertarian who's like, you know, I had the perfect philosophy for how to fix the world that, and I did nothing to fix the world around me as it continued to crumble apart. So
Jacob, do you think that this is a matter of like libertarians pursuing pragmatism over ideology and purism? Like
I would say so.
Do you think that's what they're doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and I want to get Carrie to chime in here. I mean, I feel like what I'm motivated to do is have libertarian principles be sort of the North Star that sort of guides everything I do, but then sort of realize, like, the analogy I use a lot is, so like if I'm in New Hampshire and I want to drive to Las Vegas, I'm going to have to, you know, find the route. There's gonna be multiple, you know, suggested routes I can take, and you know, at every second, every mile along the way until I'm in Las Vegas, I'm not going to be in Las Vegas. And it's also going to be, you know, incredibly, I mean, it's just going to happen. There's gonna be times where we're on that route, I'm probably going to have to be, because of terrain and things like that, be moving in directions where I'm actually not even heading towards Las Vegas, right? And so, like, I feel like as we move towards trying to get to that libertarian future we want, I don't see it as like we're going to even have like a straight line there. Like, I feel like we're going to be navigating terrain where there's going to be peaks and valleys and twists and turns. It might be two steps forward, one step back, but I just want to be moving rather than staying still, because the one thing I know is that if we stay still, we're not going to get anywhere. So we at least need to start moving in that direction. And, you know, if we miscalculate and make wrong turns, okay, then we can backtrack or whatever, but that's still better than not moving at all. And I feel like sometimes what I hear from libertarians, and this is what gets into what Carrie and I were talking about over the last couple of days, is that I'll say, hey, I feel like, so let me give you an example, like, and the whole like borders debate, I'm kind of like, you know what, like, I know we all would all agree here. I think we're all ANCAPs. So the ideal solution is, of course, that the state just shouldn't exist, and that only borders that would be legitimate are private property borders. But I've become more persuaded by people like Dave Smith, who I had on the show recently. I know you've had a debate with Dave a couple of years ago, Spike, on this topic, yeah. And you understand where he's coming from, even though you don't agree. Yeah. But just that, like, well, that's the ideal. At the same time, you know, while the traditional opinion has often been that open borders is the more like interim libertarian position for while the state exists, yeah. I feel like looking at the current immigration crisis, it's hard for me to be like, yeah, we should just be saying, you know, even if it's just rhetorically saying, yeah, we should just let them all in here. Like that seems to me to be not a tenable position. And so I'm like, all right, if I'm going to be advocating for something, I would say I don't want totally closed borders, but how about we have, like, I don't know, 50 Ellis Island checkpoints?
How about the government stops importing people and providing them with welfare and destabilizing their countries at home through the war on drugs, wars overseas, the nonsense they're pulling in Haiti and have been for years, and actually creating a crisis of not economic migrants, but mostly people who are surging into the country to try to escape the violence that our government is causing. So I want to push back a little. I don't think we have, in and of itself, an immigration crisis. To me, an immigration crisis would be a bunch of people suddenly said, I want to go to the land of milk and honey and go and start working. We don't have that. We have the government engaging in things to import people here by destabilizing their countries, working with NGOs to literally bring them here en masse, and then not allow them to work when they get here, forcing them into situations where they're taken to centers all across the country, having them displace the actual locals in those areas, having them take over schools and homeless shelters and everything else. Again, telling them, you must continue to report to us. You cannot leave this area. You have to go where we tell you. You cannot work. And basically creating a standoff between these migrants or asylum seekers or whatever you want to call them, imported people, and it's having them face off against the actual local population of people that have been living there, and creating this crisis as a result of this. That is the crisis that we have. And so the question I would ask is, if the government are the people, is the organization that is creating this mess, precisely what evidence or compelling reason do we have to think that they're the ones we should turn to fix it?
Oh, I agree. I wouldn't. So,
Jacob,
Carrie, go ahead.
Let me say something here, because this is the first crisis where libertarians have actually felt it as a crisis. Okay. Every other crisis that the government has manufactured in the past, we've been like, no, this is a fake crisis. And so we haven't been freaked out by it. This is the first time where libertarians have been freaked out by it. And
That's fair.
So I think we need to keep that in mind. Like, this is why
I'll grab that.
Robert Higgs has talked about this in his book, Crisis and Leviathan, that when you feel this sense of threat and you want a quick solution, and Jacob, we talked about this on our Twitter thread, there is a high time preference for finding a solution. And the government is there to be like, hey, we can fix this problem.
That we created.
And that's exactly, Robert Higgs has said, that's exactly how the government expands. And right now what we have is libertarians going, I feel the crisis now. Yeah, let's try and use the government. And this is the point. Like, this is the moment of truth where we have to say, like, before it was really easy to be like, no, we implement our principles. And now that we feel the threat, no, this is the moment of truth where we implement our principles. You might think this is an invasion, but what have we said about making peace with people, right? You trade with them. You reach out to them. These aren't people who are... people talk about these immigrants being military aged men. I really believe that this is a consequence of the fallout of COVID, and they are here because they've been promised some sort of, economic benefit. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be reaching out to them and saying, hey, yeah, because we understand that immigration actually supports the economy. Right. But right now we are feeling the threat. And so that's why you have guys like Dave Smith and you, Jacob, who are like, maybe we should compromise a little bit.
And to be clear, because I agree with you, and I agree with what Spike said, that I don't think the federal government should be the solution, but I don't think that it's helpful to just be like, all right, well, then I agree, we should end the war on drugs. We should stop doing all these interventions everywhere that are destabilizing other countries. And those are still things that we should be working towards. But regardless of what we do or what we advocate for, the state did create this problem, and it's going to have a hand in what comes next. And so I'm saying libertarians can either decide what can we do in terms of what we're saying to push the overall, American population's message to the politicians and shift the Overton window. Like, we have an opportunity to be part of that. And if we're just saying, well, the solution is Encapistan, well, that's not going to, I think that's going to fall on deaf ears.
I don't think we're saying that.
Well, and if we say that the solution is, well, we should just have a completely open immigration system, I also think that's going to fall on deaf ears. Whereas I don't think that's also what we're saying.
So this would be like, I remember in the opening weeks of COVID when there were still some libertarians who were like, we need to do something. This is a crisis the likes of which we've never seen. People are going to die if we don't do something. And they'd say, I'm sick of libertarians saying that we should just all go out and be unsafe. That's not what we're saying. And it's not what we're saying here either. What we're saying is, from a messaging standpoint, when we're asked about immigration, we should be at the forefront of saying, not only is this an immigration crisis, this is an importation and destabilization crisis that's being carried out by the government. And it's the very Department of Homeland Security and DEA and FBI and ATF and State Department and all of the agencies and departments that we want to protect us from this dangerous migrant problem that are creating it. Right. And I think that from the beginning, we should be saying that. And it's not to say that we go, okay, the answer is we need to say welcome to all these folks coming here. And that's the only thing we should be saying. We need to recall what actually got us here, because otherwise we're going to be doing what conservatives do when it comes to things like the war on terror, and what progressives do on things like COVID and guns and violence and things like that, where we get so caught up in the crisis that's being created by bad government policy and say, well, someone's got to do something in the meantime. we got to do something instead of looking at this holistically and saying government got us here. Government's not going to get us out of it. We need to look right now. Yes, there are immediate things that need to be done. The government needs to immediately stop engaging in the kind of foreign interventionism, including destabilizing foreign governments that we're seeing in Haiti and in Ecuador or Guatemala, the country where they basically the U.S. government and multiple NGOs that were operating under the aegis of the U.S. government basically nullified the results of their election. Like, that stuff needs to stop happening. And Those are positive actions that can happen right now that will slow and reduce the kinds of surges we're seeing right now. Another answer, which is technically a not perfect libertarian answer, is that the federal government was never supposed to handle questions of migration. That was supposed to be left, according to the 10th Amendment, when something's not mentioned in the Constitution. And this is not an ANCAP argument. It's a constitutionalist one, not a perfect libertarian one. It's supposed to be left to the states. Okay, well, great.
That's my argument.
And let the states figure it out. And get the feds out of it. And the beauty of that is right now, conservatives are saying that. They're saying, let Texas handle it and let Arizona handle it. And we could say, yeah, no, they should handle it. We should get the feds out of this entirely. And we should get the feds out of creating the problems that are causing them to come here en masse and actually literally being imported here in the first place. And we'll be the only people saying it. While every other person that wants to call themselves a border hawk or wants to say that they're defending our communities starts at the very moment they get to our border, we'll be talking about the things that caused them to leave their house and start coming here in the first place.
Right. Well, I completely agree with that. And just to be clear, that is what my position is. Like, I don't want to trust ICE to enforce the border. I don't want to trust the federal government to do it. And that's why I've thought the principled compromise is to, yes, while always be talking about the root causes of the issue, if then people go, okay, that's what caused it, but what do we do about the status quo? Say, listen, let's not trust the federal government. I pressed Dave on this, because like Dave said, well, we should just, you know, his talking point has been like, bring the troops home and put them on the border. And I'm like, yeah, but even if like I granted to you that that would be a good thing to do, which like I can see his point, even though makes me a little bit twitchy to talk about militarizing the border, but whatever. Just like, you know, for sake of argument, grant his point and be like, let's do that.
Right.
I'm like you, like, I don't trust the federal government who's creating this problem to solve this problem. But I also feel like we need to give people some kind of practical, like, all right, here's a not perfect, but a somewhat, you know, better than the current status quo policy prescription. And I think, yeah, decentralization, like letting the individual states on the border. Now, they should do this without federal money. Like, I don't think that the federal government has to contribute funds to them doing this. But, you know, other than that, like, they should be left to do what they want to do in terms of enforcing their own state borders. Now, that's not perfect. And so, like, Spike, you're saying you would be fine with that. Well, I agree. I'm just saying there are a lot of libertarians who then go, but no, that's not fine. We can't advocate for that because, you know, we need to advocate for what is right at all times. And states don't have, you know, Texas doesn't have a right to impede upon the free movement of people any more than the federal government does. And so this gets into the pragmatic versus pure principled libertarian debate.
Let me say something, because I don't know if you guys noticed, but there was a report that came out today from El Paso, and immigrants had actually overrun a chain link fence border where the Texas National Guard was set up. Now, there happened to be a bigger metal, taller fence that stood in their way, but they completely overran the National Guard. We have to remember that when you use military action, there are unintended consequences, and it usually amps up tensions rather than relieves them. And what we need to do in a crisis is to relieve the tension, not amp it up. So, yes, decentralization, yes to, you know, states making decisions about these things, but militarization, whether it's on a state level with the Guard or a federal level with the U.S. military, is going to have the same effect. And this isn't, by the way, this isn't pragmatic versus idealist even, because that's not the issue. We're talking about what's going to be effective to actually make change. And, you know, you can say, because you have a high time preference and you think, oh, National Guard can stop this, or, oh, U.S. military can stop this. And the reality is no, they can't. We've seen this time and time again, where when the U.S. military gets involved or the National Guard gets involved, things do not go the way as planned. And amping up tensions at the border is not the answer. So, you know, when we're talking about solutions, if we are actually using our principles, and this isn't, by the way, idealist, there's actually three different ways of looking at this. There's the pragmatist way, which is purely pragmatic, completely devoid of principles, just what seems to work. And then, and that's what, like, for example, the GOP did, where now the only thing that they are conserving is corporatism. And then incrementalism is only a policy strategy. And that's, you know, trying to sneak in our ideas and bills the way, you know, socialist ideas have been snuck in, you know, during the past 100 years.
Yeah, technocratic,
You have gradualism, which is what Rothbard talked about. Your aim, like the target that you're shooting for, is Encapistan, but you understand that the way that that unfolds in history is gradual, because that's inevitable. And that gradualism is not pragmatism, and it's not incrementalism. It's just facing reality. So we aim at the goal based on our ideals, based on our principles. And we operate on those principles, and they are not going to be perfect. But if we actually believe in them, they should be way more effective than employing the state and their tactics, which we know have failed over and over and over again and have brought us to this moment.
Yeah, so this actually goes back to the, Jacob, your analogy you were using if you were driving from New Hampshire to Vegas, that, you know, you wouldn't take a straight line. You'd have to deal with things like traffic and weather and, you know, the direction that the roads are going and things like that. You might find that there are temporary periods of time where you're actually traveling more towards the direction of New Hampshire than you are towards Las Vegas, but it's because you're along a path and so forth. But in that analogy, if we're going to, it's not a perfect analogy, obviously, but if we're going to use that analogy, those things, the traffic, the weather, the level that the, you know, the fact that the road might go, it might swerve this way or whatever as you're traveling it, that's not you choosing to turn this way instead of taking the path that you know will lead to Las Vegas, right? It's not you going, you know what, maybe if I just go this way, eventually that'll lead me back this way. And I think that's the closer analogy. Yes, we are going to face a battle in implementing the kind of the gradualism, like what Carrie was talking about, and trying to get that incremental approach. I know it's not incrementalism, but that incremental step-by-step approach to get to where it is we want to go. But that is already going to come from other people. That's already going to come from other people's objections and from externalities and terrible things and crises that happen that lead people to lose faith in the path that we're setting forward. All of those things. It shouldn't also come from us saying, oh, I don't know, maybe we were wrong about that. I have to address the whole National Guard military thing, because I think there's a misunderstanding in what they can actually do. The rules of engagement of the military and the National Guard, especially if they're on U.S. territory, is completely, it's much higher than even like what police officers or border agents could do. So, for example, the reason that that video, if you haven't seen it yet, you should. And there's literally like, I don't know, 10, 15 Texas National, I believe it's Texas National Guardsmen, and they're basically trying to hold back this throng of migrants. And they're going, get back. And basically they're bluffing. I don't know if they were, I don't remember now if they were holding firearms or if they were just like this and saying, get back. One of them like kind of snuck under them, like kind of did a slide under them. And the rest of them realized, oh, we can just run past you and you can't hurt us. The rules of engagement, they're not allowed to do that. They're literally not allowed to do that. They are not allowed to use deadly force, even in overseas in war. You can talk to a veteran and they'll be happy to tell you about this, that, you know, there were times they saw the enemy with guns and they couldn't do anything until they were either pointing them at them or shooting it at them, because the rules of engagement don't allow them to just shoot someone or even use, they're not allowed to use tear gas or pepper spray or sonic weapons or any of this other stuff. And they can't use any kind of lethal or less than lethal force unless they're in danger. If people are running by them, that's not a danger to them. And so it's like trying to use a main battle tank to take kids to school or something like that. It's not the right vehicle. And right. so I think that that comes from a misunderstanding of that among many people who think, oh, we can just put them there. And if the migrants start coming over here, they can fire some warning shots. And if that doesn't work, they can kill a couple of them. They literally cannot do that. And if they did start doing that and the government let them, I can guarantee, you want to talk about that eventually getting used against you, that you would literally be the next target on their list. The very second that they would get away with something like that, they go, oh, we can kill people on U.S. territory who don't pose a threat to us. That's good to know for the future. So no, that's definitely not the answer. I think if we're going back to the what is the right now but not perfectly libertarian solution and what can we be telling people is basically defederalizing this. And that is a realistic thing. You already have Texas saying, we'll take care of it. You wouldn't do it, we'll take care of it. And that should be done across the board. Let the states figure out how they are going to handle this. Let's apply the 10th Amendment here. And in doing so, we can talk about the fact that the feds were never supposed to be involved in migration to begin with. So we can actually like constitution pill people about how this was supposed to be done in the first place. Then we can open their eyes up to the crisis and how it was being created through government funding these NGOs to bring them over while simultaneously destabilizing their countries back home, which is why they even wanted to leave their countries in the first place. How the things like the war on drugs and the way that they implement their border policy and immigration policy incentivizes cartels and turns them into the most powerful people in that part of the region, that part of the world, and how these things create this crisis by basically, you know, understand that our legal process, quote unquote, for someone who wants to immigrate from most of the countries south of the Texas border, that, you know, in central Mexico and Central and South America, for most of them, the legal process is no. There's not actually a way for them to come here legally. But they can come here illegally. Like, that's actually, it's not easy, but it's very feasible. Many millions have done it. And so by doing that, by not creating a single conduit by which good actors who actually want to come here legally and participate in the American experiment, by not allowing that to happen, and by the reality of the fact that the market's always going to find a way, they're empowering these coyotes and cartels who in many cases are working hand in hand with the drug cartels who are being empowered by the black markets created by the war on drugs. These are the things that we can talk about if we say, yeah, this is a huge problem. And we can talk about how it's not just a problem at the border. It's a problem at homeless shelters in New York City. It's a problem in schools in Illinois. It's a problem all over. It is everyone's problem, and it's a problem that the government created. Here is how they created it, and here is a de-escalatory plan, which involves getting the feds out of it, getting the states back involved, stopping this immediate crisis that we're suffering from, and alleviating the problems that were being created, stopping the problems that were being created in their countries that made them come here. Stop funding these NGOs, stop destabilizing these countries, and we can actually never have to worry about this again. That's the solution to this.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that, defederalizing is the thing that we need to be talking about right now, because I know for a fact that the Republicans are planning an immigration bill that involves tracking all of these immigrants. And, you know, they're going to use E-Verify as a way to do that. And the only way
ID cards, yeah.
And the only way that they're going to be able to differentiate immigrants from citizens is by making citizens get involved in the E-Verify system too. So decentralization or defederalization of the border and getting the federal government out of immigration needs to be the conversation that we're having right now.
Yeah. Even Thomas Massey was talking about this on, I know you want to call it Twitter, but it's called X. Stop dead naming X, Jacob. Thomas Massey was talking about this. He said, listen, you know, I forget how he opened it, but he said, you know, we got a border crisis. We need to deal with these illegals that are here, but national ID is not the answer. Like, and neither is, for example, I'm sure everyone here has heard of it, but maybe some of the folks listening or watching this haven't heard of it. We have something called the 100-mile zone. Mm-hmm. And what that is the federal government and anyone they deputize, including your local police, they have, and it's been upheld in court all the way up to the Supreme Court, they have said that 100 miles from any border or shoreline, So basically, we're like almost three quarters of every American lives, including me. I'm in Myrtle Beach. I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of miles from either border, but I'm a few blocks up the road from the shore with the Atlantic Ocean. And so I'm well within that 100-mile zone. They reserve the authority in all of that area to stop anyone for no reason and do whatever they want with them, detain them for basically as long as they want to. I think there's some arbitrary time, cutoff time, so it's not like Gitmo, but they can hold you for a very long period of time. They can search you without a warrant. They don't have to have a stated reason. All they have to do is say after the fact that it was related to immigration. And that is what and I'm sure that that came from a policy that was trumpeted by people who consider themselves small government conservatives, because they said the government needs to do something. And the government said, yeah, I got you. Yeah, I absolutely will do that. We need to look at this border crisis the same way we looked at COVID, the same way that we look at terrorism. No one here thinks that terrorism is good, right? But we need to recognize that government creates these problems or makes them worse, or sometimes both, creates the problem and makes it worse. They're not the solution to it. Just show of hands, who here is like really cool with child abuse? Okay, good. We're all on the same page here. Right now, my organization, You Are the Power, we're uncovering in Georgia and other states as well, where the Child Protective Services, in Georgia it's called the Division of Family and Children's Services, or DFACS, but whatever it's called in each state, their Children's Protective Services, because of the incentivization that has been built in through Title 4D of the Social Security Act, these Children Protective Services are acting as child smuggling rings, as child traffickers who are taking children that they know full well are not being abused, falsely accusing the parents, having the police and the DA arrest them, but never take them to trial so that they have that charge their head, so that they can destroy them in family court, have the family court judge order non-reunification, place the children for adoption, very often order the two parents to never talk to each other ever again. So not only are they taking their children, but they're estranging the husband and the wife, or the baby mama, baby father, whatever. The mother and the father are never able to speak to or be near each other ever again. And it's all because they get federal money for it. We're not saying, when we talk about how that needs to end, we're not saying child abuse is cool. We need to embrace child abusers and we're cool. We're saying the government sucks at handling this, and the federal government especially sucks at it, and they need to be taken out of it completely.
Right. All right. So I agree with pretty much everything that you are saying. But I just think that, you know, so I said I was going to play the position of the black pill libertarians, but I'm not going to be playing a different position, which is there are a not insignificant number of libertarians who are going to disagree with everything you're saying, everything's Carrie saying, and saying, you know what, tyranny is tyranny no matter who does it. So just defederalizing it is not an answer, because we're still going to be restricting people's rights, and there is no actual crisis. Like, who cares if all of these people come in, and, you know, unless there's people who are actively committing acts of violence, they're just coming here, and you don't have a right to preserve a certain demographic. You don't have a right to have some kind of stability around you. You don't have, you know, you're just buying into to fear and propaganda. And if you know, and then beyond that, if the state of Texas tries to stop people from coming here, that it would actually be good and the libertarian answer to tell the federal government that they do have a right to stop Texas from doing that, because what we should be advocating for at all times is just, you know, the enforcement of what is you know, the libertarian view of what those individual rights are. So if at any point there's any, whether it's a local government, whether it's the state government, whether it's the federal government, there's anyone who's trying to restrict people from moving across any space that's not private property, that we should just be, you know, 100% against that. And so that, again, there's not an insignificant number of libertarians who I think are making that argument, and who would say that, you know, the three of us who are saying defederalize it and decentralize it, that's actually a betrayal. Like, so they're going to say, you've already given up the game and you're not acting on principles. You're acting on, you know, we're just localizing tyranny rather than actually shrinking tyranny. So what would you say to that?
I think it's important to remember that what we're dealing with is a multifaceted problem. And granted, it is one that is created by especially the federal government, but they have used many different avenues through various bureaucracies in order to create that problem. So this isn't just a policy problem. This isn't just a strictly immigration problem. This is also an economic problem. This is a human rights problem. This is a multifaceted problem. And so what libertarians need to remember is that the government is only used for certain problems, right? It's only used when we're talking about the improper use of force. When we're not talking about the improper use of force, there are other solutions to the problem. We aren't saying, you know, this is the famous Bastiat quote, right? We're not saying don't deal with it. And I would say that the libertarians who are like, well, if they want to, you know, walk across the public school grounds because it's quote unquote public and not private property, you know, they aren't being true to libertarian principles either, because part of libertarianism is to say that, you know, nonviolent solutions or nonviolent problems require nonviolent solutions. It doesn't say no solutions at all. We just let them do what they want to do.
Right.
So, you know, those libertarians need to remember that. And I mean, it holds true for those libertarians who are wanting to use improper use of violence in order to try and stop it. It is a multifaceted problem, and we need to stop, slow down, and be able to identify that so that we can respond the way that's appropriate and principled. And that's not to say we're not responding.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the inverse of what we were doing before, yeah. Where it's like, well, if you don't want a wall, or for, you know, a doubling of the number of ICE agents or Border Patrol or sending the national, well, then you don't want this situation dealt right. with. This is sort of like the inverse of that.
Right.
And I will admit that the first thing I thought was when you were saying like, oh, you're not being principled, you know, we shouldn't have the government involved at all. Also, the Fed should be stopping Texas. It's like, if there is someone out there, a brave soul out there who is saying both, I'm being unprincipled by saying we should look to the radical minarchist / second or 10th amendment constitutionalist position instead of the anarcho-capitalist position, but also we should utilize the federal government to stop the state government from infringing on the natural rights of migrants, then they're doing the thing they just accused me of. So no, you.
Right.
Outside of that, I just want to say this. And again, this goes back, this is really the best use of your analogy here. If within the libertarian movement, we can't figure out what we collectively or by consensus think about this subject, wait till you have to talk to normal people. So, and that's not to say, oh, we should abandon our principles or not have our principles in mind when we're talking with people. It's to say, we got a lot of persuading to do. I come from the business world. I come from the world of developing startup businesses and sales and marketing approaches and all of that. One of the first things that I ever read that I wasn't assigned to read as a teenager was How to Win Friends and Influence People by Carnegie. And whenever I have a libertarian ask me, what libertarian book should I be reading? I'm like, you've read enough libertarian books. You're good. You need to read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Carnegie. And the reason I say that, or Carnegie, I always forget how to pronounce that. But the reason that I say that is because for people who say that we need to do things through persuasion and not coercion, we sure as hell don't do a lot of persuasion. Like we talk about persuasion in the abstract, but then our version of persuasion is we're going to create the perfectly logical argument. And it is going like you literally cannot find anything to fault in this argument. And once we have come together, we're still working on it because we can't agree with each other on things. But once we do come up with that perfect anarcho-capitalist argument, we're just going to shove it in the faces of the American people. And they're going to say, my God, look at this thing. This is the most beautiful argument I have. There's not a single part of this libertarian argument that I could refute, unless I were to engage in some kind of cognitive dissonance or logical fallacy, and I would never do such a thing. Honey, change our registration. We are now libertarians, and we're not even going to vote because we're anarchists. Like, this is foolish. This is not how things work. The way things work is that you meet people where they are, both sometimes physically, like where they physically are, go to their spaces and their things that they like to do, but also meet them where they are here. And if where they are here right now is that they look at this border crisis and go, I can't believe that this is happening. And I can't believe that my kids can't use their rec center anymore because it's been filled with a bunch of people that just got here. And I can't believe that homeless people are having to live on the streets because they're shoving the migrants into homeless shelters. If you show up with the perfect libertarian argument, they're not even going to look at it. They're going to think you don't care. They're going to illogically think that you're saying, I don't care, look at my argument, which you kind of are saying, but that's what's going to happen there. If instead you say, yeah, you're right, this is a nightmare, and I'm going to tell you something that no one else is saying. This didn't start at the border, and the problem isn't that people wanted to come here. And then you explain bit by bit with the funding of the NGOs and the destabilization of their countries and all of that stuff. Explain how we got here, and then you can explain how we can fix it. Again, it's not incrementalism, but incrementally through steps, through an actual series of steps that will move us towards a more decentralized 10th Amendment constitutionalist policy. And we can actually get people on board with something that gets us way closer to Las Vegas, using your original analogy. All right. I just want to say this one last thing, because I know you're going to say something way smarter than me, Carrie. So I want to get my bit in. I want to say this. Anything short, if you are an anarcho-capitalist, if you are a Rothbard button-pressing abolitionist anarcho-capitalist like I am as well, there is no button. And so in the meantime, while there is no button, anything that you advocate for that isn't saying the solution is to completely get rid of all governance and all unnatural hierarchy and only implement all private property and privatize everything and decentralize everything. If you say anything short of that, you're technically also selling out on your principles. Mm. Now, good luck selling that to the other 99.99% of people in the world.
So I totally agree. And I want to dovetail off of something that Spike said before I have to get off and go to teach my class. Jacob and Doug know this, but Spike, you don't know this. I teach critical thinking classes using the Socratic method. And what I have learned, and when I teach this, I do not teach debate. I've never taught debate. I teach these skills the way Socrates taught these skills, which is as a means of discovery and learning. And what I've learned in that process is you cannot teach somebody to think through an idea that their brain is not ready to filter through. And so you have to listen to them. You like what he said, you have to meet them where they're at. What is their concern? And guide them through the process. And that takes intention. That takes, your ability to cut off your own emotive reactions about it and walk with them through these ideas so that their brain can start making those connections. And so that's what we're talking about. We need to be able to, libertarians are, God love them, we're our own worst enemy. We have a very hard time talking to one another. Yes. We need to slow down and help people learn how to think. And that requires us to also be reflective. And with that, Spike, I want to say, I'm so glad I got to have this conversation with you, but I have to check out now. So,
well, I'm glad you could be on.
It'd be a boys club
great
now.
With you. Yeah. Yes, it's just
now.
Only Jews now. This is now the LCI Jew room, open and circumcised. And that's literally, this is all Jews now.
Like Jesus said, let them be like the Gentile. Just cast them out from your midst. Something tangential then to keep the conversation going. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about all the stuff about the border policy and decentralization. So to go back to me channeling the black-pilled people,
yeah,
a lot of them, if they're listening to this, are going to be asking this question. They're going to be like, Spike, Jacob, you guys are talking about trying to push our country in a more libertarian direction. Meanwhile, there are forces conspiring all over the world, and this border crisis is part of this whole thing, that are trying to push for a more global-based government. And so you're talking about trying to make things more free at home, but if we don't push hard to try to like preserve the little bit of liberty we have now, we're not going to be able to advance more liberty. So they'd be taking the position of like, we have to have a strong national border and keep people out because we have to preserve what little liberty we have left and resist the growing push towards a more globalist style world order, which we kind of, I guess, like elements of our world are already like that, but they think that we're already heading in that direction. And so we have to embrace authoritarianism. We have to embrace a sort of like, you know, nationalism to ward off a greater threat down the road. And just like libertarianism, listen, it sounds nice, works well in theory, but like we have a hard time convincing people here at home of libertarianism. How are we going to convince people in all these different countries, all these different cultures that are so much different than ours, who speak different languages even, and that's a barrier too, is that a lot of libertarian ideas are not, you know, translated into other people's languages and stuff. So, you know, they say if we can't make libertarianism work here in America, it doesn't look like it's working anywhere else in the world. So how can you have any hope? We just need to settle for, you know, something else that's going to at least ward off a greater evil.
Yeah. So I'm going to use another car analogy. And this is the fun part of being a libertarian. You're sitting in the car and you're not driving because you're outnumbered, right? So they already voted and you didn't even get to sit shotgun. You're sitting in the back and you're watching and they're driving and you're seeing the signs say cliff ahead. And you say, guys, there's a cliff ahead. We're not even on the road anymore. We're driving straight towards the cliff, and they go, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. The libertarians, whatever. And they keep going and they go and you keep getting closer and closer. And you said, guys, listen, I told you that we were going to, you know, we just busted through that fence. There's warnings here. We're going to go off that cliff. Look, the horizon's right there. You can see the water. We're going to go off this cliff. They go, you have no idea what you're talking about. And then as the car is going off the cliff, they turn to you and go, libertarianism has failed. This is the endless thing that we deal with, is that we suffer under the failures, or I think it's actually gone according to plan, but the failures to do what they said they would do of authoritarianism, of the war on terror, of the war on poverty, of the war on drugs and the war on crime and every other war that they declare on people. And as a result of that, things are worse and worse and worse and worse. Perfect example is this crisis we're talking about. Government working with NGOs and destabilizing countries overseas and empowering smuggling cartels and drug cartels and arming drug cartels, things that create the perfect storm for the crisis we're suffering from, and then saying, this proves libertarianism doesn't work. No, it proves authoritarianism doesn't work. It proves that central planning doesn't work, or rather, central planning works perfectly if you're in the driver's seat and you want to centrally plan a nightmare for everyone else so that you can grandstand on their suffering and get them to do what those black pill libertarians are doing. Say, I'm going to give you whatever power you need, just please protect me. At that point, they have won. They've beaten you. If you have already reached a point where you're saying, yeah, you know what, I need Joe Biden, who is the president for the next few months, I need Joe Biden to have whatever power he needs to have to be able to deal with this thing, you've lost and they've won. Congratulations. Like, that is the stark reality of this. Now, the question of libertarianism, authoritarianism is rising in other countries and we need to do what we can to introduce authoritarianism here to preserve liberty here. I would say that, first of all, I'm seeing liberty rising in some other countries faster than it is here. I mean, Argentina, who would have thought that was going to happen? In Australia, they have elected libertarian officials and their ideas are increasingly mainstreaming at the state and federal level in Australia. I was just at LibertyCon last month in DC, and there were people representing over 60 countries from around the world, and I'm hearing all their stories, and these are the future Javier Milei's in their countries. Does it ensure that they're going to win? No, of course not. But liberty is rising, we have to, if we believe in what we say, and I guess that would be the thing I would ask them is, do you believe libertarianism works? Like, absent the external things that are happening, do you think that libertarianism is the best way forward? If so, it should always be the best way forward. Again, it may have to be a gradualism. We may have to get there bit by bit by bit. But if you believe it works right, if you believe that it works better than, say, Chinese communism, then the only answer is libertarianism. Any diversion into something that we know hasn't worked is only going to make it harder for libertarians to pull us back out of the cliff later on, if and when we do ever actually get there. You know, perfect example, Javier Milei in Argentina. He is having to do a undo a decades of authoritarianism and the harms that it caused under both left-wing and right-wing authoritarian governments. We're going to have to do the same thing here. But if at any point you find yourself, if you consider yourself a libertarian, you recognize that government creates or worsens crises in order to get people so desperate and suffering that they turn to the government and say, okay, fine, here, have all the money and power and authority and whatever you want here. I'll sign up for and submit to whatever it is I have to. Just take care of me and protect me. And then you find they've won. They haven't beaten me, but they've beaten you.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think so to provide what, you know, theorizing what the counter would be, because again, I'm not totally black-pilled, but I have my, you know, reservations that I think some libertarians live a little bit too much in the abstract. They'd say, yeah, well, listen, let me like, so. Yeah, of course, right? And listen, I love my abstract principles, but I want to see improvements in the world too. Again, like I said at the beginning, my motivation is, I don't like to see people suffering, actually. Like even with my reservations about open borders, which that was reluctant. I mean, I think, you know, Spike, like I typically was on the open border side up until recently. And listen, I'll admit, like Carrie said at the beginning, you know, yeah, this is a little bit of like the state has manufactured a crisis. And I am going, okay, wow, this is a problem. But it's like, that's because states are violent, violent mafias that create problems. And it, like, yep. Just because the state's manufacturing a crisis to then utilize that crisis to their advantage doesn't mean it's not a real crisis, which I think we all agree here. Like
it is absolutely a crisis.
So, yep. You know, I think what I'm worried about is that although, so you said you've had good experiences, you know, conversations with people, you know, obviously you brought up Australia. We know about the Milei movement in Argentina. Well, Argentina had to get really, really bad before it seemed like the people were actually willing to listen to someone who just was, you know, preaching a pure anarcho-capitalist message. And so, you know, it's like, I got four kids. I got a fifth kid on the way. I don't know if, like, so are we saying that things have to get that much worse before they can get better? And then if not so, then, so what's different then about here that we don't have to go down that path?
I'm saying that we should stop advocating or we should never advocate for the policies that we know will lead to us getting in that bad situation. So, and I would also say that the fact that Argentina was dealing with triple digit inflation and a multi-year global or multi-year it's severe depression during all of that time. Imagine you're losing, you know, double digits economically every year and the price of the cost of living more than doubles every year. That didn't guarantee that they would take on libertarianism. The reason they took on libertarianism was because someone met them where they were. Someone knew where to reach them. They were desperate. They knew that they had been failed and they wanted a different answer. And so instead of saying, oh, you're all a bunch of idiots, we need to abolish the state, or saying, oh, you know what the problem is? You know, these people aren't listening to you. You need someone who's going to listen to you with some, just a bunch of platitudes and no actual policy behind it and get elected. And then, you know, surprise them with, hey, I want to cut government. And they're like, cut government? What are you talking about? Instead, he met them where they were. He explained that he understood what they were going through and he was going through it too. And then he explained how it was happening. And so by the time he got to the point where he was ripping the agencies off of the wall or the board there or whatever and saying, afuera, afuera, by the time he was doing that, that wasn't their first exposure to him. If that had been their first exposure, they'd been like, what, why, we don't we need education? What, healthcare? Don't we need? Doing that, they were 100% on board. They were out in front of his campaign events with chainsaws because he explained to them what the problem was, why that problem happened, and how libertarianism fixes it. And he, at no point did he say, oh, the problem is that we should use the government to do this thing. He said the government is the problem. Politicians are the problem. The leeches that have make up our political caste are the problem. We should be doing the same thing here so that we don't have to wait for it to get that desperate. And at no point should we be pushing for the kinds of dystopian authoritarian policies that are going to ensure that we end up in that direction. We know that things like empowering the federal government to protect us from migrants is just going to lead to things like national ID cards and more money for the Patriot Act and the 100-mile zone and ICE agents raiding people that are not migrants and then saying, whoopsie, well, we got qualified immunity, so there's nothing you can do to us. We know it's going to lead to all of that. So why would we advocate for it? And we know that a lot of that money will then go to NGOs who will bring even more of them here, and it'll go to destabilization programs to destabilize their countries even further so more of them want to go with the NGOs and the coyotes and come over here. We know the government makes things worse with every penny they get. We know that the government makes things worse with every ounce of power we give them. So don't give them a penny more and don't give them an ounce of power more, because you know how they're going to use it.
So you're saying central planning can't defeat central planning?
Yeah, I'm saying central planning exists to protect itself. Yes, no, yes. You cannot centrally plan. And by the way, this is also a failure of libertarians. We're trying to centrally plan liberty. Hmm. One of the things that I'm very happy to see in most sectors of the Libertarian Party is an acknowledgement that we're not going to just get a libertarian president elected and have him trickle down liberty to the rest of us, right? Like, we're going to have to get elected locally and then at the state legislative level and then at the statewide level and at the federal level. Still run candidates across the board, but understand what their roles are in the meantime, because we're not going to centrally plan it. We're going to have to show the world, the rest of the country, how liberty works, and empower them to implement it. So we need to make sure we're not doing our own thing that we say not to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's a biblical principle too. Like in Romans 12, where it says, you know, you do not overcome evil with evil, or not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And I mean, that's I guess like easier said than done. But I think to your point, I think part of the problem is like you said, libertarians sometimes feel like, I want to do this thing. Why isn't everyone else doing this thing? Rather than finding just other like-minded individuals who want to do that thing that they want to do, while also holding up other people who are doing a different thing. I don't think it necessarily always has to be a zero-sum game. Like, listen, there are some people who think any involvement in politics is a waste of time. They instead want to focus on, you know, like more agorist, more like Bitcoin routes, or like, well, let's start creating, you know, alternative institutions. I'm like,
good,
go do that.
Good.
Like, yes. I don't know crap about that. So how about that's your interest. That's your passion. That's your skill set. You do that. Like what I'm good at is getting in front of people and talking to them and then going out there and door knocking, going out there and being in committees and going out there and, you know, using politics as a sort of stepping stone to then interact with people in my community and in my state and in my country. So like, we don't have to be, you know, enemies. It's like, you know, we have different, I mean, this is just libertarian principles of the economy, which is human action, are going to apply to the economy of libertarian activism, right? Like, we're all going to act on our different preferences and find the things that we're good at and excel at.
I can give you an example of that with what I'm doing with You Are the Power. That's my way, primary way that I'm spreading liberty. I also then make memes, which are, you know, hit or miss. But the main thing that I'm doing is with You Are the Power. And what we've done is, first of all, we've distilled libertarianism and the non-aggression principle and concepts like self-ownership and things like that, individualism. We've distilled it down as much as we can to something that just about every single person intrinsically agrees with. And that is what I call the principle of human respect, that we do best when we respect each other as individual human beings, and that we do best when people in turn respect us as individual human beings. And that doesn't mean we have to respect people and like them or respect their opinions. We have to respect that they are people. It's why we don't step on them the same way we would step on a roach. It's why we don't go, wow, that person looks delicious, and kill them and cook them and eat them, right? Because we respect that there's something special about an individual human being that is inviolable. And that whenever we stray from that, whenever someone doesn't respect someone else as an individual human being, we suffer as a result of that. That's the cause of that's the cause of murders and the cause of rape and the cause of crimes and the cause of wars and all the terrible things, terrorism and all these things. They're all caused when people first set aside their respect for those people as individual human beings. So I've distilled it down to that principle. And then we find people at You Are the Power who are being disrespected as individual human beings by their local governments. And we tell everyone about these stories, and 99.9% immediately is on board. Very rarely does anyone disagree with any of the causes I'm taking on. There's almost no argument, which is such an incredible shift from dealing with libertarians, but spreading libertarianism politically. I go and I work through these causes, and I tell people about these families that are being destroyed and people who are having their homes taken for no good reason, all this stuff. And then I get them on board to do actual activism. So I'm teaching them, even before they acknowledge themselves as libertarians, I'm teaching them how to be libertarian activists. I'm giving them calls to action. Email this person, tag this person, go to this rally, go to this city council meeting. And they show up and they help. And then I give them another one and another one and another one and another one. And in doing so, every time I say the same thing. These officials were not respecting them as individual human beings, and we weren't expecting them to, because they're the government. And we just have this expectation that they're going to do that. But if those very same officials were outside of their capacity as government officials doing those same types of things, we'd band together to stop them. We need to band together to stop them, even if they are doing it as the government. That's what I do at You Are the Power. And we are spreading liberty and the liberty movement, not by arguing with people or by trying to explain our principles, but by demonstrating it, by giving them this, human interest tearjerker cause that they can help us with, and then giving them another one and another one and another one, and then driving home each time that this is about respecting each other as individual human beings, and that that's why we agree with things like the non-aggression principle. That's why we believe in things like property rights. That's at its core is why we believe those things, and it's something that you could explain to an 8-year-old and they'd understand. That is one of many ways that you can spread liberty. And if you like what I'm doing, you want to join us at youarethepower.net, please do. I'm shameless plug. But if you look at me and you go, I just don't like that guy. What he's doing is fine. I want to go do that, but I'm going to call it something else, and I never want to have to listen to Spike Cohen again. That's fine. Go do it. If you look at me and you go, that guy is an idiot. I don't want to talk to these normies. I want to find the remnant, and I want to, do the agorism stuff. I want to create alternatives to government and let the people who are looking for those alternatives find me. I don't want to go out and talk to these idiots. Most of them aren't even autistic. So I want them to come to me. And that's fine. That is fine. I know. That is fine. Do that too. Like, literally, whatever it is that you want to do to spread liberty, and it might be more than one thing. I'm doing more than one thing. That's good. Do that too. Again, we're not going to centrally plan this. There is no one way to liberty. There's going to be many ways. The one thing I ask you to do is, anytime that you find yourself advocating for government to get involved in something, I would invite you to take a step back and say, is this really a crisis? Is this created or made worse by government? How did they do it? And then what compelling reason? Oh, why did they do it? And of course, the answer is to make people desperate enough to need to give them more power. And then based on that, what compelling reason do you have to think that you should advocate for them to have more power? If you still feel like you need to advocate for them to have more power in that thing, Godspeed. Maybe I'm wrong. hopefully I am wrong. And if you win, then it'll work. But I encourage you to try to reconcile that with yourself as to why you're advocating for it.
Yeah, and I think it's just a tricky balance. It's like sometimes there can be options on the table that just there might not be a consensus on, because people might say on one side, I think this is decreasing, you know, power, and other people might say, no, I think it's increasing power, and so the political solutions are often hard to come to an agreement on. And I think, you know, part of what I think tugs at people, and I feel this too sometimes, and I do a good job of getting myself out of it, but I think some people, they look at all these complicated hypotheticals, they look at the status quo and how people can't come to a consensus on how to deal with X position or Y position. They look at the state of the world and they might, like, in their heart of hearts, like, believe libertarianism works, but they've just lost hope. Like, they just feel like it's too hard. I don't know what I can do to make a difference. I'm just going to live my life. I'm just going to kind of accept, you know, the things that are around me and just do that. And, you know, so, as we're drawing to a close here, I'd like you to maybe speak to that. Because I think even if they don't say it, I feel like that is at the heart of why a lot of people become blackpilled, is that little bit of like hopelessness that leads to apathy and then that kind of opens the door to just being like, well, I can't make a difference anyway for liberty, so I might as well, you know, pick the most tolerable flavor of statism that, you know, appeals to the one or two issues that I kind of care about. And that's why people end up going back to Team Blue or Team Red. So what would you say to that?
So I agree with you that at its core, they're basically saying, I give up. Like, holy crap, guys. Like, I don't think we're going to get there. And then they might say, and so I'm going to go be an agorist and only focus on that. They might say, I'm just going to not be involved in any of these things. I'm going to go live a normal life and, you know, hope that I don't live past when things really start to get bad. Or they might say, I'm going to advocate for, you know, acceptable forms of authoritarianism that are going to hurt me the least, basically. And hope that that's what prevails in my. I totally get that. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I understand what would lead to that. Part of the reason I started You Are the Power is because I saw a lot of people in the general public and a lot of people in the liberty movement who felt completely powerless. They felt like there was absolutely nothing they could do to affect anything. And I said, let's start as small and locally as possible to find things that we can actually win on. I talked a lot about a culture of winning back in 2002. And, you know, part of a culture of winning is recognizing your wins might be so small starting off. Anyone who's had to deal with getting clean and sober or any kind of 12-step program thing or anything like that, when you're or someone who's used to be very heavy and is losing weight, it feels like it's hopeless when you start. You know, if you weigh, I was once 100 pounds overweight. And when I first started like dieting and exercising, I'm like, man, I can barely do any of this. I wasn't losing much weight at all. I'm like, this is not going to work. But you get small little victories and they build up to bigger ones. And so what we do at You With the Power, and what other people are doing in their own small ways, is they're finding something that they actually can affect. And they're finding other people that agree with them on that thing. And they build out and work to have some small victory. And is that going to topple the Federal Reserve and the military industrial complex? Not right now, but can that build into something that gets bigger and bigger and bigger and becomes something that can challenge those things eventually? Absolutely. And that's how it's going to have to grow. We didn't get where we were overnight, and we're not going to get where we want to go overnight. We may not, unfortunately, be here when it truly happens, or when we get far closer than we want to. We could very well be watering trees whose shade we will not enjoy. But if you find something small, and again, with You Are the Power, we got all sorts of causes you can work on, and we have a nearly roughly 90% success rate now. Our win rate is around 90%, where we successfully get government officials to do what we told them to do and do the right thing and start respecting people as individuals. But I'm not the only one doing that. There are many people out there with victories, large and small. Find that thing that speaks to you and do it. And if right now nothing's speaking to you, then don't do anything. It's okay to not be a liberty activist. We do that a lot to libertarians. It's like, oh, there's so few of us. All of us need to be all hands on deck all the time. If right now none of this is speaking to you, take some time for yourself. If you forget the thing that makes you want to even fight for liberty in the first place, then it's all for naught, right? So focus on that. And if and when you find a thing that speaks to you and that is something you're willing to fight for and has a winnable, achievable victory for you, then do it. And like I said, I'm here to push You Are the Power. So we're doing that all the time. If you want to check out what we're doing, go to youarethepower.net. We'd love to have you be a part of it. But whatever it is you do, you know, there needs to be, you know, find something that is an achievable goal and work towards that. It might be in your own city or your own backyard, but do that and you can build out from there.
Right. So, short answer, is libertarianism winning?
I believe so. Yeah. I think libertarianism as a ideology and as a belief system is more prominent now and more known, more heard about and known of now, even 5 or 10 years ago, much less 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. Well, Spike, I've been encouraged by this. Yeah. And if I was black-pilled, I feel like I would have seen the light. I certainly feel extra motivated and encouraged to feel like, you know, I mean, listen, like, doesn't mean that it's going to be just smooth sailing from here. But I agree with your sentiment that like you said, the small victories lead to greater victories. And I think sometimes we're so focused on the big picture things, and we should talk about those and explain to people, like we talked about at the beginning, like explain to people how these problems happened and then explain the predictive power of how we understand how central planning fails. We understand how interventionism in foreign policy fails. We understand how interventionism in the economy fails, right? So because of that, we're able to be right about these things and draw people to us. But then instead of trying to like win these you know, large abstract problems all at once, I think, you know, it's like focus on the small stuff first, you know, walk before you run and run before you run a marathon or whatever. But like, you know, I think that is sort of the path forward. So, you know, also very important question, does shrimp belong on pizza? I don't know. Someone had a last minute question. So I feel like
is this all we get?
Does shrimp belong on pizza? Like, this is why libertarianism can't work, Spike. Because people
I am now joining. I'm rejoining the Republican Party. Thank you, Morgan. Thank you, Morgan. I can't. This is why liberty fails. I came into moments ago. You heard me. I was ready to fight to the end.
One hour and 17 minutes. Spike was going strong.
We have to build a wall, but like a lot of them, like more than you think. Like, there are going to be many walls. There need to be
Listen, I'll bring you back. Just as they say, build the walls around the welfare state instead of the border, we'll just build a wall around Morgan so that we can't spread this violent hate speech to the...
I just want to keep Morgan away from the seafood, okay? That's it. Okay. If this is this is that compromise position. Is it pure libertarianism? No, Lilberts, it's not. But it is a practical solution, which is to keep Morgan away from the sea monsters.
Oh boy. Well,
Morgan gets it.
Yeah. I also wanted to highlight this comment from the Christian Caucus, and yeah, I love what you're doing at You at the Power, Spike. I love I love the approach that you have to libertarianism. You're able to unite people under common goals and you know, advance libertarianism in a way that, you know, perfectly balances a lot of the things we're talking about. And so before we hop out, I know we've already plugged youarethepower.net like a million times, but plug your stuff one more time. And also, if you have anything that's coming up, since this is a live show, if you have anything that's coming up that you want to plug, any appearances, any you know, current or upcoming projects that people might want to get involved in, share those before we close out.
Sure. So tomorrow I'm going to be dropping a video. It's addressed directly to Governor Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia. I'm going to be calling for him to meet with me with You Are the Power and with the families who his Department of Division of Family and Children's Services are tearing apart, so that we can talk about how this happened, the problem, the incentives, the perverse incentives that are in place in his defect system that are causing this, how he can fix it, and how he can be known as the guy who said this ends with me and created a standard for reform that not only saves thousands of innocent people in his state, but millions more across the country. So if you are on the internet, I encourage you to help share that video and repost it on X, or retweet it, as Jacob would say. Holding on to the ghost there, and tag
never
Brian Kemp in it. Yes,
can
never
we compromise
forget.
With retweet on X.
Yes, retweet on X. Yes, that is a good compromise position. Retweet it on X. Hit Brian Kemp on his post and tell him to meet with us. Do everything, because we're going to be jumping all over him. It's going to be a pressure campaign, and we're going to put the pressure on him to do the right thing and meet with us, talk about how we can fix this and save a lot of families. So I invite you to help me on that. That's going to be kind of what we're doing over the weekend and into next week, to really put that pressure campaign on him. I will likely be hosting a space with at least one of the family members who are going through this nightmare next week. Space on X. You can tweet it, but it's on X.
Right. A good compromise. We'll call it X, but it's still tweeting. I can. Live
okay,
with
that's
that.
Fair. It's a tweet. Yeah. It's a tweet space on X. then on April 10th, so in a couple of weeks, to debate David Hogg on gun control.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And that's going to be, we shall see how that goes. Yeah,
like, earlier you said you were against child abuse.
I was,
and now do it, Jacob. I'm not so sure.
Like, I know that we're making a joke here, but like, actually that was my very first thought when I saw the little banner. I was like, this is going to be like child abuse. This isn't even a fight. Like, and look, we're honestly being, I mean, obviously we could say, oh yeah, you're a better you have better rhetoric than David Hogg. You've got the better position, you've got the right position. But like, literally, like, is this really fair? I mean, you're just so well, you're way more knowledgeable. We truly
listen.
Mean this. It's like, this is going to be
listen,
terrible.
And I appreciate that. Dartmouth Political Union came to me and said, David Hogg wants to debate. We asked David Hogg if he wants to debate you on gun control. And he said yes. And I said, wow. Okay. That's what I will tell you about that. Like,
Google's going to have to redefine bloodbath again, because I heard from Tom Woods that they redefined it lately.
Listen, I'm going to go there. And my point of this is saying to David and to, I presume, a lot of the people there are going to be on David's side, say, I assume that you guys also agree with me that murder is bad and that, you know, we need to find ways to reduce violence. Here's why what you're proposing doesn't work. Like, I know it'd be easy to go on there and dunk on all of them and call them idiots and do all of that. And Firearms Policy Coalition does a great job of doing that. And I don't want to take that from them. So I'm instead going to be saying, hey, listen, guys, we're all on the same page here. Murder, bad. Let's talk about how we have less of that. Let's talk about how we can protect people. Let's talk about why gun control doesn't work and why it actually makes things worse. So I'm very happy to have that conversation. And then from the 17th to the 24th, or no, from the 19th to the 21st, I will be in Salt Lake City for the Libertarian Party of Utah convention. And then I don't know if they have already started advertising this, but on the 29th, I'll be on TimCast. So that's what I got going on for the next month or
excellent.
So
not much.
Not, but you know, a couple things here and there.
Well, Spike, we appreciate you having making the time to come and talk with us today, and White Pill, me and White Pill, hopefully a lot of others listening. Everyone listening, if you're new to this stream, you know, this is this new project of the Libertarian Christian Institute, the Green Room, where we're trying to have a lot of people on to have these kind of like open, uncut conversations like we just had with Spike. So if you like these kind of things, make sure you like and subscribe this video and to this channel, wherever you're watching it. We appreciate you tuning in, and we will talk to you on the next episode.